7, Stan Phillips.
The day we sweated out on the streets of a runaway American dream. At night we racked the mansions of glory and suicide machines. Sprung from cages on highway and from wheel fuel injected and stepping out over the line.
Happy Thursday, Met fans. How you doing? Well, we actually saw an extra inning game yesterday. And guess what? In the 10th inning, there was no ghost runner. It was a funny 10th inning, and I'll tell you a little bit about how that 10th inning even came about. But first, let's tell you that the Mets did lose to the Astros 5-3 in 10 innings. Carlos Carrasco pitched. He pitched pretty well. He got off to his usual shaky start. I guess Carlos Carrasco and shaky starts in the first inning are just like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. He allowed a bloop single on his first pitch tonight. And I'm saying to myself, uh-oh, here we go. Then Carrasco then crossed up James McCann for a pass ball. Then he allowed a deep fly ball to center and then walked Michael Brantley to put runners on the corners with one out. But then he got the big pitch. Alex Bregman was up at the plate, and he got Alex into that old pitcher-friendly 6-4-3 double play, and that was nice to see. So Carlos actually escaped without any major damage in the first inning. He settled down the second. He was looking good. He pitched a scoreless inning of work, but he was tagged in the third by Michael Brantley, and that was the only bad pitch he made. I mean, Brantley just drilled this ball. He hit a rocket to right field, and it was a no doubt about it home run. I mean, Starling Marte just looked at it, and it was funny because the wind was blowing all directions. And I think Terry Collins even said he didn't move, thinking maybe the wind would blow it back to him in the outfield. But it was a rocket by Brantley. Brantley is one of the best pure hitters in baseball, and he's a pleasure to watch, even though he is on the opposition. And then the fourth inning, Carrasco was hit by the long ball again, and this time Jordan Alvarez hit a solo shot. And that one was not really that bad. It was hit to left field, and they got some help from the wind as it cleared the wall and left. And even on TV, when it was initially hit, it did not look like it was going to be a home run ball. So Carlos Carrasco won four innings, and that's the positive thing. It was a little bit uneven, you know, the home run ball. He did allow six hits and three earned runs, but I think the main thing out of this outing was he got to get his arm back in starting pitching strength. And he looked good doing it, if you ask me. He set out what I guess he accomplished to do, and that was to get four innings in. The two home runs he gave up, like I said, he struck out three and walked one. So his ERA for the spring now sits at 6.75 over his seven innings of work. But it was a fun game. It was a fun game. Starling Marte again showcased what he can do in the bottom of the first. After singling on a line drive off pitcher Jose Urquidy, Marte then stole second base. And even Terry Collins mentioned, oh, by the way, the announcing crew was Wayne Randazzo and Terry Collins. I wasn't sure how that was going to work out. But they were very easy on the ears, and it was a smooth broadcast. And congrats to both. They did a great, great job. Now, Marte then stole second base, and what I meant to tell you before was Collins even said you very rarely see stolen bases in the preseason games. So I guess Marte really does want to get into game shape there by attempting the stolen base. And he even tried to steal third base, but the pitch was lined foul. Now, the Mets scored to failed to score an inning thanks to a Pete Alonso double play ball. But Marte's spark at the top of the lineup was evident, and he's going to be a welcome addition to the Mets this year. He ended up going 2-for-3 with a stolen base and a run scored. Now, the Met bets were quiet for a good portion of the night, but Pete Alonso jolted them to life in the sixth. With two men on and two outs, Alonso waited back on an Adam Morgan breaking ball. And it was funny because Collins and Randazzo were even talking about all the home runs Morgan used to give up when he was a starting pitcher with Philadelphia. And boom, what does Alonso do? He skied a rocket. He golfed it out of the ballpark to left field. A three-run homer to tie the game. And that definitely was nice to see. Alonso And how did that happen? How did the two guys get on base? Glad you asked. Because they, Pete Alonso hit his home run after, what happened? I know it was two hard hit balls, right? Who hit? Looking at, I keep score in these preseason games. Yeah, I'm one of those wackos. I keep score. It was Marte and Lindor who had shots past the third baseman. And I think the third baseman at the time was Don Kessinger's grandson. Remember Don Kessinger from the Cubs? Yeah, he was playing third base for the Astros. So it's amazing. Like, I even remember Don Kessinger as a kid. Now I'm watching his grandson play against the Mets. Damn, I'm getting old. But anyway, Adam Ottavino came in, and he pitched a clean fifth inning for the Mets, and he's going to be a welcome addition. I still say getting Familia was addition by subtraction when we knew we could sign Ottavino. I think Ottavino will be more reliable than Familia. And Ottavino struck out a pair in a 1-2-3 inning work, and he needed just 11 pitches. Now, Drew Smith made his spring debut for the Mets in the sixth inning, and after missing some time due to foot soreness, Smith looked strong out of the gates. He reached 97 on the radar gun, and he pitched a 1-2-3 inning, striking out one Astro with a nasty 84-mile-an-hour pitch, a little cut fastball. Now, the game remained tied through nine innings, leading to Buck Showalter and Dusty Baker, and it was comical because SNY had the cameras on them, and Buck is holding his finger to Bucky, to Dusty one more inning, and Dusty couldn't make up his mind. And Randazzo and Collins kind of gave Buck a little dig in the 10th inning when the Astros went ahead and scored two runs by saying, "Are you sure you wanted to do that, Buck?" or something to that nature. I can't remember offhand, but it was funny. And the top in 10th inning, Steven Nogosic was the one who gave up a two-run homer to dead center off the bat of Franklin Barreto. And the Astros held on to win. It was a fun game. Fun game. And Randazzo and Collins, like I said, were fantastic. And I think that might have been Terry Collins' first TV appearance as a commentator. I know he did some gigs with Randazzo on the radio side last year, and he was pleasurable to listen to. But like I said, some of the highlights I picked on were Marte's shot. He hits the ball hard. When he gets his pitch, he drills it. And they were even talking in broadcast about Michael Conforto. And it's amazing. Now Scott Boras came out and said, according to the guys in the broadcast, that Conforto actually hurt his shoulder in January, and now he's actually feeling healthy again. He's showcasing himself for other teams. So I don't know if that was the reason why Conforto was still unsigned, but we shall see. And it was good. Al Leiter is one of the coaches, and Michelle Margot interviewed Al Leiter, and that was a pretty good interview. But one of the funny plays in the game was when Francisco Lindor went deep in the hole, and who was the runner for the Astros? He was slow as anything. I mean, Maldonado for the Astros. He backhanded a ball, and usually you would have to. He was deep in the hole, and he had to rifle the ball. But he had so much time on this guy that he threw a one-hopper and still got Maldonado by his step. Maldonado may be one of the slowest runners I've seen in a long, long time. It was funny. J.D. Davis. He was showing some arm at third base. We forget that J.D. Davis has quite an arm. And he had a single in the third inning. Like I said, Alvarez for the Astros had a windblown home run. And I really do like Alvarez. I think he had that great rookie year. I think he's going to be a guy who honestly can hit like 500 homers, at least in the major leagues. But we'll see. Bold prediction on my part, I know. But it was just, like I said, it was so nice seeing Alonso hit that home run with Marte and Lindor getting the hits. And it was just great. It was just great. And what were some of the... Oh, you talk about a bonehead play. Brinson from the Astros got tagged out at home thinking it was the third out. He got thrown out. The play at first was the runner was actually safe, and he thought that would have been the third out. So on the throw to the plate, Brinson was just trotting home, and he got tagged out to end the inning. Some of the other things, Cordial looked good coming out of the bullpen. The bullpen really looked good tonight. Really, really looked good. An interesting stat was mentioned in the broadcast. They were talking about walk-off RBIs. Did you know that in the entire history of the New York Mets, what player has the most walk-off RBIs? That is Wilmer Flores. And Terry Collins couldn't have enough nice things to talk about when it came to Wilmer Flores. And he actually thought that Wilmer, after everything was said and done and he wasn't traded, would have stuck around with the Mets and been a career Met player because he was so loved by the fans. And he was, well, you couldn't put lefties up against Wilmer, let's put it that way. And Terry said his natural position would have been first base. But we have Pete Alonso now, so I don't know how that would have lasted with Pete coming up through the chain. But Terry very high on Wilmer Flores, and that was nice to see. And speaking of Pete Alonso, he was also interviewed during the game. And you can tell that he has matured so much. And if you ask me if they have to pick a captain for this team, it would be Pete Alonso. He is just so dedicated to the Mets and what he's doing. And his three-run homer, he leads by example, Pete Alonso. But he knows that what Buck Showalter can lead this team to the promised land and what Buck lends the organization as far as being the manager. And it's just nice. It's nice to see. And I think he's going to have another fantastic year. And it was mentioned that since he's come up as a rookie, his rookie year when he hit 53 homers, he has more home runs than anybody in Major League Baseball since coming into the major leagues. And we underappreciate Pete sometimes, but he is really, really good. And he's becoming more and more selective at the plate. And I just think he's going to be the man for the next 10 years, the Met leader on the field. And he has 106 home runs and 370 regular season games already. I remember when he first came up, we were all nervous about him playing first base. We knew Dominic Smith was the better ball player at first, defensive player. But Alonso keeps working and working. I mean, he may not be Dom Smith, but he's getting so much better around first base fielding the ball, and especially handling throws in the dirt. He has really, really become a great defensive first baseman, and, you know, from compared to what he was. And it looks like he's really paying attention to the details. But he, like I said, just watching him, because I watch every game, on the defensive side and just running the bases, he's doing all the little things, not just hitting the home runs. And you could tell he wants to be the best player he can be on this team. And like I said, from what I'm watching, he got off to a little bit slow start in spring training this year, but he's not swinging at those bad pitches. And he is going to be one of the key cogs, if not the key cog in the Met offensive lineup. And again, the guy I think is going to be the key. If Alonso has a great year, it's just going to make, Lindor has a great year, it's just going to make Alonso that much better a player. And I'm really, really psyched for Francisco Lindor this year. Really am. I think he's going to have a big year. And it looks like the Mets are going to like play guys all over the field. It looks like the only guys that are going to be playing in their one position all year, probably Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, and James McCann and Thomas Nito. So even during the broadcast, like today, Robbie Cano was the DH, and they said they're going to put him at first base tomorrow. And that's going to be interesting. I guess they just want to rotate everybody around, keep them fresh. Who knows what's going to happen with Nimmo and Marte. Connacht played left and right, depending on who is in the lineup. Escobar can play second and third, although I think Escobar is going to be your third baseman. Marte, your right fielder. Nimmo, your center fielder. J.D. Davis is another one. Third base, first base, left field. All these guys could be interchangeable. And I think they're taking a page out of like the Tampa Bay Rays philosophy that everyone can play every position, that these guys are so talented that they can do that. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So the Mets don't have to worry about one position player going down if they can just interject somebody else in there. And I think that's what Buck is kind of working on now during the preseason, and that is going to really help out over a long 162-game schedule. Now, we all know Brandon Nimmo is like the ultimate wear-em-down guy at the plate for opposing pitchers. Nimmo has such a great eye, and that's why he has such a great on-base percentage. But this team, the acquisitions that they have made, like Mark Hanha, he could be another Brandon Nimmo when it comes to actually being good at the plate. And he has a great, great eye at the plate. And last year, and throughout his whole career, Hanha has actually been one of those guys like Nimmo. And he's a hitter that averages 4.23 pitches per plate appearance at the plate. And that was fifth best among qualified hitters in baseball. So you get Hanha and Nimmo, and we could wear down pitchers before they can even go five or six innings. So at-bats are going to be key for both Nimmo and Hanha in the fact that they don't even have to get hits. They'll just be helping out by wearing down these pitchers. And that wins ball games. You got to work the count. You have to work the count. And I think that's going to rub off on the other players on the team. You don't want to be someone who's just going to be swinging at the first pitch all the time. And I think that's part of Buck's persona, that he'll be doing that. And even Francisco Lindor, like, he got a 3-2 walk today. He got a 2-2 count, and then he flew out to right field. And even on an 0-2 pitch today, he got on an error. So even when it was an 0-2 pitch to Lindor, he got on. He hit the ball hard. So I'm impressed. I'm impressed. The Mets are going to be more selective to play. I'm all for it. Even Robbie Cano, even when he made outs, it was on 4 pitches and 5 pitches today. Yes, I even track pitches. That's what I do for you guys. But it's very refreshing to see. And I'm all for it. Now we're going to celebrate some Met birthdays today. Whose birthday is it in Met folklore today? First one we're going to celebrate is Ryan Cordell. If you remember Ryan Cordell, you are a good, good Met fan. Also, Tom Houseman is celebrating a birthday today. Who remembers Tom Houseman? Okay, a couple of you do, and that's always refreshing to see. And those are your two birthdays for today. And we'll talk about both individuals once we go over our transaction. On this date in 1971, the Mets traded one of their most popular players, Ron Swoboda. Ron, along with Rich Hacker, was sent to the Montreal Expos for Don Hahn. Don Hahn was a good glove man, but a lot of Met fans were a little upset that we no longer had Rocky Swoboda to root for. And on this date in 1981, the Mets traded Juan Berenguer to the Kansas City Royals for Marvell Wynn and John Skinner. Who remembers Juan Berenguer? He almost had like Nolan Ryan stuff. He could throw the ball a country mile right past the hitters, and he had good stuff, but he never really harnessed it. Kicked around with a few teams. I think he pitched probably more often than not, although then with other teams with the Detroit Tigers, but at first, I thought Juan Berenguer was going to be one of the flamethrowers of the future for the Mets. Never really happened. This date in 1985, the Mets traded Rusty Tillman to the San Diego Padres for Rick Lancelotti. Yeah, big trade in Met history, wasn't that one? What else happened on this date? I know you're on the edge of your seat waiting. And we're not going to disappoint, are we? Are we? I don't think so. Who remembers Alan Zinter? Another prize prospect in the Mets. He was going to be a future catcher. Well, on this date, he was traded to the Detroit Tigers for Rico Bronya. And that was actually a very, very good deal for the Mets. Rico had some good years with the Mets. Fortunately, Rico was very injury prone and had bad back, but was never really the same. Couldn't play a full career healthy. And that was a shame. And then on this date in 1996, the Mets traded Ryan Thompson and Reed Cornelius to the Cleveland Indians for Mark Clark. Then on this date in 1997, the Mets claimed Yorkis Perez on waivers from the Atlanta Braves. And the Mets traded utility man Tim Bogar to the Houston Astros for Willie Lopez. And on this day in 2005, the Mets signed free agent Mike DeFelice. And on 2007, on this date, the Mets signed outfielder Ricky Wade. I remember when Ricky Wade first came up with the Yankees. Yankees were expecting him to be a near all-star every day. Never really developed. The man had talent, though. Could throw the ball well defensively and had a nice stroke, but never really put it all together. And on this day in 2009, the Mets released Tony Armas. And on this day, the Mets signed in 2014 one of the best hitters I've ever seen, Bobby Abreu. Of course, we got him at the end of his career, but it was nice seeing Bobby in a Met uniform. And I think Bobby's one of those underrated players of his era. He could really hit the ball, and some make the case that he should be in the Hall of Fame. Now let's talk about the Met career of Ryan Cordell. The previous season, he was in the Chicago White Sox organization. And January 3rd, 2020, Cordell signed a minor league deal with the Mets. He had his contract selected to the 40-man roster on July 29, 2020. And he was designated for assignment on August 5th. And then on September 26th, he was selected back to the active roster. On October 26th, Cordell was designated for assignment by the Mets following the acquisition of Robel Garcia. He elected free agency on October 28th. So for a brief spell, Ryan Cordell was a Met, and you could see his Met existence was basically yo-yo-like. He was all over the place. Did he get any action with the Mets? Yes, he played in 5 games, 8 plate appearances, and 1 base hit. Now let's talk about Tom Houseman, shall we? What makes Tom Houseman so unique? Well, Tom Houseman was the first free agent ever signed by the New York Mets on November 21st, 1977. Now, despite being the franchise's first free agent signing, Houseman began the 78 season in AAA with the Tidewater Tides. In 10 starts, Houseman went 5-2 with a 1.22 ERA to quickly earn a call up to New York. He was doing well in the minors. However, a stint on the DL from May 25th to June 17th delayed his Met debut until July 7th. He earned his first win as a starter on July 17th against the Braves and also collected his first career run batted in. Yeah, that was back in the day when pitchers actually hit. Now, his finest start of the season was his third start, also against the Braves. He pitched eight innings of shutout ball before handing the ball to Met closer Skip Lockwood. All told, Houseman went 3-3 with a 4.70 ERA. Now, 79, it was almost the same thing again. Houseman began the 79 season in AAA. For Tidewater, Houseman gave up 75 hits, 23 walks, and struck out 27. His ERA was at 4.50 when he came up to the Mets in June. He split time between starting and relief roles and lost all 4 of his 4 decisions despite a relatively low 2.84 ERA. He earned his first career save on July 8th against the Padres, pitching 3 1/3 innings of 1-hit ball. His first win of the season was a complete game victory over Vida Blue and the San Francisco Giants 6 days later. He was lifted early in his July 31st start against the Pirates when he hurt his lower back covering first on a ground ball. After sitting out the entire month of August, he wouldn't earn his second win until September 26th against the Cubs. For the season, Houseman pitched well. He just didn't have a good one-loss record. He was 2-6. He had 2 saves and a 2.75 ERA. Now, he began the season in 1980 as a starter, and he fell to an 0-1 record with a 6.75 ERA, and now was flip-flopped back to the mop-up role duty in bullpen. But an exceptional month of June changed that. His first win of the season came on June 6th against the Pirates. He entered the 5th inning, pitched 4 2/3 innings, a scoreless ball. His next win came in his next appearance when he pitched 5 innings of shutout ball against the Dodgers. And perhaps his finest performance came on June 27th when he earned his only save of the season by pitching 3 innings of no-hit ball against the eventual World Series champion Philadelphia Phillies. The strong pitching continued into July. He pitched five innings, allowed one earned run to pick up the fourth save of the season for him against the Montreal Expos on July 3rd. From June 6th through July 18th, Hausman was on fire. He was 4-1 with a 0.94 ERA. For the season, he went 6-5 with a 3.98 ERA. He pitched a career-high 122 innings and gave up 125 hits and only walked 26 guys while striking out 53. Now, he did have an elbow injury in 1981 and made only 20 relief appearances for the Mets. In 33 innings, he allowed 28 hits and 7 walks with 13 strikeouts and an ERA of 2.18. The injuries continued in 1982 with both shoulder and elbow problems. He pitched part of the year for Tidewater and was in 21 games for the Mets. He pitched 37 innings with the Mets, 44 hits, 6 walks, 16 strikeouts, 4.42 ERA, and .295 on-base average. On September 10th, he was reunited with his former manager, Joe Torre, when he was traded to the first-place Braves for Carlos Diaz. During that stretch run, he appeared in 3 games for his new club, allowing 6 hits and 4 walks. Now, the following year, he signed with the Pirates. He was in their minor league system. By 1984, he was out of baseball. He did attempt to come back for the PCL affiliate of the Padres, the Las Vegas Stars, and the Dodgers affiliate, the Albuquerque Dukes, in 1985. But he didn't do too well. His record for that return in the minors was 3-4 with a 5.25 ERA. All right, now we're going to get to our Met Jeopardy and Met Trivia question today. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that if you're listening to this podcast, you need to do 2 things. You need to subscribe to the podcast so you're alerted every time a new episode is up, and we're doing one every day during the regular season, so you won't want to miss anything. You'll be informed of everything that's going on in Metland. And if you're a Facebook person and you aren't aware of our group that is our complement to this podcast, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life, please do join. We'd be glad to have you. Once again, it's New York Mets Baseball Way of Life, and we're on Facebook, so check us out there. Now, if you ever want to give me a comment or criticism or suggestion, I'm at philstan41@gmail.com. Would love all kind of feedback. Thanks. Now, let's get back to the trivia and Jeopardy question for the day, shall we? We're going to give you the Jeopardy. We're going to mix it up, give you the Jeopardy first. 2 clues. On May 11, 2010, got his first major league victory, an 8-6 win over the Washington Nationals. 2nd clue was on July 6, 2010, was called back as the Mets placed Fernando Tatis. Yes, Fernando Tatis Jr.'s father was placed on the 15-day disabled list. Those are your 2 clues. The trivia question of the day is, again, courtesy of group historian Harvey Porras. Who hit the first home run as a designated hitter for the New York Mets? Think about that one. And at the end of the podcast, we'll tell you what the correct answers are. And if you're not in the group, you kind of missed us reminiscing about Rusty Staub and his passing. And that was sad when Rusty left us. And then we talked about Benny Agbayani's a big day in Japan at the Tokyo Dome. When the Mets beat the Cubs in 11 innings when Benny hit the pinch hit grand slam home run. And we had some good stats there. We were talking about the 3 pitchers who were really red hot in exhibition baseball. Jacob deGrom has 10 strikeouts and no walks over 5 spring innings. Max Scherzer has 12 strikeouts and a 0.64 whip over 11 innings of work. And Tyler McGill has 0 earned runs over 6.2 innings pitched. Although he's walked 5 and allowed 200 runs to score, but he's been working out of trouble and looking good, coming up with the big pitch when they needed it most. And like I said, we have all this good stuff all the time in the group, and people make contributions. We have some people who post us on, tell us what's going on in the world outside of the Mets and baseball, like Robert Bonilla. He showed a great picture of Buck Showalter and Terry Collins catching up at Met Camp. That was a funny story if you're watching the broadcast today about Al Leiter sharing a ride with Chavez, the new batting coach and Buck Showalter, and Showalter riding shotgun in the back seat. And he was not happy with Al Leiter's driving, and Al wasn't allowed to drive back home. Cool stuff. Cool stuff. But again, we cover all the bases in the group, so please do join. And now we're going to give you the answers to the Jeopardy and trivia question of the day. The two clues for Jeopardy were on May 11, 2010, got his first major league victory, an 8-6 win over the Nationals. And the second clue was on July 6, 2010, was called back as the Mets placed Fernando Tatis on the 15-day disabled list. What is the correct response? The correct response is, who is Raul Valdez? And congrats to one of our group experts when it comes to Met Jeopardy, Kareem Hayward, on being the first Haywood, I should say, just like Spencer Hayward, on being the first to submit the correct response. And the trivia question was, who hit the first DH home run for the Mets? Well, the answer to that one is Matt Franco, who did it in 1977 against the Baltimore Orioles. And that'll wrap things up for today's podcast. Hopefully you got those answers right. And if not, try again tomorrow. We'll have Jeopardy and Trivia along with everything else that's going on. And we'll have a recap of the Mets-Nationals game for you. And it's going to be fun. Tomorrow means just one day away from opening day. You know, tomorrow was supposed to be opening day, and ironically, it was supposed to be against the Nationals. In a way, I'm kind of glad it isn't, because the New York weather here is supposed to be a little bit treacherous. And I'm not sure if they would have gotten the game in or not, but it's going to be some nasty weather sometime during the day. So I'm kind of glad it's not. Hopefully when the Mets do open up in 2 weeks at home, it's a beautiful day. And that would be very symbolic of the beautiful season we're going to have and the beautiful season we're going to have here just talking about the Mets all year. So have a great day. Enjoy the game tonight against the Nationals. And we'll talk again tomorrow. Take care. And remember, let's go Mets.